another pair of huts. The building on your right-hand side here, hut 6, complemented by the building end on hut 3, similar to 8 and 4. Code and cipher breaking in 6, intelligence in 3. But this operation was much more comprehensive. They were processing both German Army and Air Force traffic. By reading the German Army traffic, a comprehensive knowledge of each theatre of war, complemented by the Luftwaffe, because by tradition, the Air Force always gives aerial cover to the ground forces, unless they're American. So, lots of good news, which leads to other reflections, and perhaps I can illustrate some of those reflections. Very early in the war, the Germans invaded Crete. Well, Bletchley Park was able to give the authorities in London 2 clear weeks' notice of the forthcoming event, the date, the hour, etc. Good news that you know, then the bad news. No spare troops, planes or ships to assist the garrison. Well, the Germans duly overflew and dropped in. The defending forces put up a commendable defence, inflicting severe losses on the incoming Germans. But despite those losses, they persisted and eventually managed to secure a tiny airfield and consolidate. And, of course, eventually started to sweep across Crete, obliging our troops to make a tactful withdrawal. The Royal Navy was not instructed to take the troops off. The waters around Crete were treacherous. Fortunately, Admiral Cunningham decided so to do and assembled an appropriate flotilla. And the best news is he got the majority of troops away. Not all, but the majority. However, in the process, he did lose some 30 vessels. From a German point of view, it was a Pyrrhic victory. But more importantly, as a result of the losses he sustained, Hitler never ordered another parachute drop again. If we take the North African campaign, the Italians and Germans were supplied from Europe by the Italians. They provided the convoys. As the expertise grew here, Bletchley Park was able to advise the port of departure, the convoy route, and the port of destination. And not content with that, the names of the vessels and the cargoes they carried. To protect the regularity of this knowledge, again, safety features. No convoy was allowed to be attacked unless it had been formally discovered, i.e. overflown. Remember, there were no satellites in the sky in those days. If the Navy kept sailing over the horizon attacking a convoy, how did we know it was there? The only logical conclusion of the enemy would have been that we'd broken their lines of communication, they would have changed procedures, and we might have lost out. So every convoy had to be discovered. And then, once so discovered, the submarine, lying a few miles down the way, always had its shopping list. And the priorities were the tankers, munition ships, and similar, but under no circumstances the food ships. Because obviously in the course of, and at the end of the campaign, we'd have to feed ourselves, the Italians and Germans. That's exactly what happened. So when you read your history books, time and time again, the enemies were stretched for fuel, munitions, spare parts, and the like. But equally, if you read those books very carefully, you can read about the extraordinary amount of food stockpiled in a variety of different port areas available for our mutual consumption. Ultra was eventually communicated to the top brass in the field, and Montgomery was one of the first so entrusted. A special communications unit trained at Wadden Hall was attached to his command, and equally a special liaison unit trained here at Bletchley Park to communicate Ultra eyes only. Once he acknowledged receipt of the contents, it was taken back and destroyed. No record of Ultra was allowed to remain in the battlefield. Their next function, however, was to monitor his actions. He was not allowed to take any action which might lead his opposite number to realize that we knew what the opposite number was up to, if you understand it. It was highly protective and incredibly effective. And in fact, it was so effective, when the Americans came into the European theater of war, they adopted the same system, and their units were respectively trained at Wadden Hall and at Bletchley Park to conduct the same function. Bletchley Park contributed in no uncertain way to D-Day by identifying literally the location of every German unit operating in Western Europe. I think they identified 53 of the 55 units. It's not bad if you think about it. Also, they were able to assure General Eisenhower and the gang that Hitler's conviction was that the main thrust would come across the Straits of Dover, unlike his generals who fought Normandy, which Hitler considered a feint. And that's why he kept various divisions back in the Low Countries just in case. Then a reversal of fortunes. Operation Market Garden, Arnhem. 3 days before the event, Bletchley Park was able to advise the authorities in London that tank regiments had moved into the drop zone. Now, meetings were held, but remember, they had a good beachhead in Normandy, they were sweeping across Europe, they'd planned the event for a long time, they had the planes, they had the troops, so eventually they decided to go ahead with it so as not to disappoint the boys. Think of it now in reverse. 3 days later, enhanced German traffic being processed, and the information going in front of those same intelligence officers, and the tragedy is now unfurling. By the minute, the hour and the day, and it's escalating, and there's nothing they could do about it. They did their job 3 days earlier. The stresses and strains of actually working here were very different to the other theatres of war, of course. We'll now adjourn to a building there, and the good news is, you may sit. I'd like to come this way, please.